You finished Shanghai Surprise. You've been working with Nick Kamen. You should be absolutely exhausted.
Well, I have my moments of exhaustion. You just happen to catch me on a good day.
Madonna talks to Simon Bates.
I can go for nights without sleeping if I'm doing running around doing interviews and working on projects. But once I get, like, if I'm on tour or I have to start working on a movie every day, I really have to make myself. I really have to, like, kind of shut down everywhere else and say, okay, it's time to concentrate. I have to get to bed early, you know. I really pare down my socializing and everything. Because
how
if
many
I
hours a night do you need sleep?
Six. If I want to feel good the next day, yeah.
And if you want to look good?
If I want to look good, seven. And if I want to feel ecstatic, eight. But, like, if I sleep 8 hours and wake up, I go, oh, my God, I slept 8 hours. I can't believe it. I mean, It's a real rarity for me.
You are an extremely organized person. You're a workaholic, but that's too easy to say that. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people work very hard. But you are very disciplined, as you've inferred. And I wonder where that comes from, the background to the discipline.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a combination of a few things. The way I was raised, you know.
And how were you raised? Tell me.
Well, I went to Catholic schools for most of my life. My father was a real disciplinarian, very strict, and, you know, it was get up every morning, go to church before you go to school, and wear a uniform. And when we got home from school, we changed our clothes, we did our chores, we did our homework, we ate dinner, we weren't allowed to watch television. And it was a very kind of regimented life until we got older, you know. And then I went to public school the last 2 years of high school. That's the opposite in England. Private is public and public is private. I don't understand that, but
you put it perfectly.
Right. Anyway, so I think having that, my father was very much into working, you know. He didn't like us to have idle time. If we didn't have schoolwork to do, then he found work for us to do around the house. Mm. He thought that we should always be productive and make good use of our time. He was very adamant about that, so I'm sure that had a lot to do with it.
Well, given that, how did you experiment? How did you find out about movies? How did you find out about music?
Well, I moved to New York, and I went after my dreams. I mean, also, I studied dance for several years, and that had a lot to do with, I mean, that's a very disciplined, rigorous kind of lifestyle to undertake. That, you know, you put on your leotards and tights and you go off to dance class, you know what I mean? It takes a lot of devotion and discipline, and I think the combination of that and my upbringing, you know, has helped me be as productive as I am.
Given a strict Catholic upbringing and your father's intensity, mm-hmm. how did he feel when you started showing signs of wanting to be, I don't know, what would you call it, a thespian?
Yeah, he wasn't thrilled. He wasn't thrilled because he didn't understand it, you know. I mean,
right.
My father came from a very poor family, and, you know, his parents came over on the boat from Italy, and he was the youngest of six boys, and he was the only one who got a college education. And it was very important to him that, you know, we went to school and we got, you know, I was offered a scholarship at the University of Michigan, and that we utilized our intelligence and our opportunities and went to school and did the things that he never, or his brothers never got a chance to do. Mm. And, you know, me saying, well, you know, I don't want to go to college. I want to be a dancer. I want to go to New York. And, you know, it just didn't make any sense to him because it wasn't something that you could, I mean, dancing seems like a hobby, you know what I mean? Not something serious, something that you could make a living at. And that's what he was, you know, he wanted us all to have a good, strong educational background so that we could all be assured to having good jobs and a good future. And what can your father think when you say that?
Well,
you know?
Given that he cares about you and given that he obviously wanted to protect you, didn't he try and stop you doing it?
Mm-hmm. But, you know, he can't put chains around my ankles.
No, right. So, how does he feel now?
I think it's taken a long, long time because for many years nothing was ever happening, you know. And I'd call him up and say, well, now I'm dancing. Well, now I'm in France. Now I'm singing. Now I'm back in the United States. Now I have a band. I play drums. I play guitar. Now I have a record deal, you know. Until the records start coming out and he's saw me on television and could seem the records in his hand, I don't think he ever understood that I was really serious about it and that it was ever going to come to anything. And then you know, he saw me in concert. I think it took him a really long time to really understand what I do and take me seriously. And you can't really appreciate someone until you do understand. And now I think he does, but it's taken a while.
Is he pleased, or would he still rather you were perhaps...
No, I think now it's... Now I think he's very happy and proud of me.
Let me ask you about all those people that you were in love with, obviously, at the time, the people like your ballet teacher, your father, who saw you change.
Mm-hmm.
You had this the wonderful image, because I remember the whole of Britain being stunned that America was horrified by the idea of your navel being on display at one stage. And, I mean, how did they feel about that? Were they...
Who, my father?
Well, I was thinking all the people you cared about, your ballet teacher, your friends.
Well, my ballet teacher... I can honestly say would be pleased with anything I did.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a real adventurous spirit, you know. I can't say that my father had the same reaction. My father's a very modest guy, you know.
When did they first see you dressed up like that?
Probably in my record, like, the publicity photos that came out with my first album, you know.
Yeah.
I never dressed that way around the house. But I left home when I was 17, you know, and I didn't go back that often. I just been like since the last few years kind of getting closer to back with my family again. There was a period of time where we weren't talking a lot, and it wasn't because my father wouldn't speak to me or I wouldn't speak to my father. I just felt like I had to go away and make my own way, and I didn't feel he would understand or appreciate it till a certain time, you know, and now he does.
You did a very 30s thing in some ways, and you went to Paris, didn't you?
Yeah.
Which was sort of Hemingway stuff, I suppose. Were you a romantic when you did that? Did you view it?
I've always been a romantic.
Really?
Yes, of course. But when I was offered the opportunity to go to Paris, I went for one reason and one reason only. I was broke, and they were offering me a lot of money and an opportunity to travel and do things that I never would have had the chance to do otherwise.
But you'd never been abroad before.
No.
Little American lady in Europe for the first time.
Exactly.
Was it a shock?
Yeah, it was. It was. It was and it wasn't, you know? I mean, because going to New York was more of a shock than anything, because I'd never been to a big city like that before, and I'd never really gone to a place where I didn't know anyone. I'd never taken a taxi before. And New York's really overwhelming when you're 17 and you don't know anyone and you've never been there before. So nothing can surpass that as far as shock value, you know.
Mm.
Going to Paris after that was a shock. It was a culture shock, really, because, you know, everyone was speaking French to me and I didn't speak French, and I had to learn to speak French to communicate with anyone. So that was really frustrating. But I liked it. It was fun, but I missed New York. I mean, I couldn't wait to get back after a while.
How long were you in Paris?
5 months.
Because you left a reputation behind you for dashing around a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you didn't do an awful lot of work in Paris. You did an awful lot of riding on motorbikes and stuff, didn't you?
Well, I wanted to work. That's just it. When I went there, these two record producers had promised me a recording career, and they said they were going to give me a vocal coach and people to write music for me and stuff, and I didn't really know what direction I was going to go musically yet. I was writing words and lyrics and stuff, but I couldn't play any musical instruments. Mm. So I was very frustrated because I got there and they weren't really doing anything with me. They gave me a beautiful flat, and I continued to take dance lessons, and I hated my vocal coach, and so I never went to the class, those things. And
yeah.
But they were really busy with other artists on their label, and they didn't seem to have time for me. So every time I complained, they'd just give me more money. So what could I do,
you
know?
Sounds a blissful situation.
Well, it wasn't really, because I don't do well. If I'm not working, it doesn't matter how much money I have. I'm not happy. I have to feel that I'm productive.
Mm.
So I got miserable after a while. I mean, the fun wears off, you know? And then I felt that I was living at home again. I felt very rebellious, because there I was, wanting to do something, and I felt like I had to break away, you know? And then I said to myself, wait a minute, I can leave if I want to. I have no contracts here, and no one's forcing me to stay. But I kept thinking, well, this is such an opportunity. I'm such a fool to walk away from it, yet they weren't doing anything with me.
Mm.
They just kept making promises. So by the time I got back to New York, from Paris, I had so much pent-up energy inside of me, and I knew I wanted to be a singer at that point more than anything.
Do you know what the turning point was when you decided you wanted to be a singer? Can you remember it?
No.
Well, has it always been there?
I suppose. I mean, I grew up wanting to perform. I never knew specifically what I wanted to do, you know? I could dance and I could sing. And, you know, I did lots of school plays when I was younger and stuff, but I never knew. To me, it was just a question of, look, I have to concentrate on one thing right now, and that was dance. And then that led me to the audition that got me to France, where people were telling me that I had a beautiful voice and that I should try to be, you know, that I should pursue a career as a singer. So then at that point, when I got back to New York, I really did concentrate, and I met some musicians and for a year just locked myself away in a studio and learned and taught myself to play drums and guitar and piano, and so that I could write, so I had enough knowledge to write music, and then the songs just started coming, you know, like crazy.
How did you live?
What do you mean?
Well, how did you eat?
Well, I had odd jobs here and there. I mean, I modeled for art classes, and I'm sure that the world has seen some of those pictures and a few of our favorite publications. I also lived off the good graces of other people. Because I had a boyfriend who had a place in Queens, and he went off to work every day with his brother, and I kind of stayed there and used their studio all day long till they came back to practice.
Yeah.
And, you know, he lent me a few dollars here and there.
So it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Not much money.
No money at all, no. I went from having no money to having lots of money in France back to where I was when I left, having no money again.
Which means, once again, you see, you're a fairly tough person, because most people, me included, if you said, okay, you can go to Paris, you don't have to do anything, just pick up the money, I would have stayed in Paris and got drunk, to be honest with you. And yet you didn't do that. You came back to New York knowing that you hadn't got a contract, you hadn't got the money, and the times weren't necessarily going to be easy for you. So you must be a pretty tough cookie.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't believe that you can be happy or... I mean, you have to work for something, and you can't... You can't have anything handed to you. If it's handed to you, it's not going to last.
You really believe that?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I made it through the wilderness. Somehow I made it
through. For the very first time. What was the turning point again when you actually got things together after the year when you were practicing and you were locking yourself away?
Well, then they finally let me be in their band. Because, see, I kept wanting to play in their band, and they kept saying, no, you know, there's no opening, sorry. And then the drummer quit.
Mm-hmm.
So I was practicing drums every day, and they didn't know it while they were off to work. And I said, I can play the drums. And they were like, oh, sure. So then I did. So I auditioned for them, and then I was the drummer. And then, meanwhile, I was writing music on my guitar, and I begged them and begged them for months to let me sing one song, and then the other guy could go back and play drums. And then they did, and then I got a taste of that, and then I didn't want to play the drums anymore, and then I wanted to play more songs, and eventually they booted me out because I was hogging all the space, you know. They already had a singer, they didn't need me, but that was my springboard, you know.
Yeah.
And then I put my own bands together, and, you know, I moved back into the city, met lots of musicians, and, you know, worked my way up to the point where I made a demo and got my record deal.
Can I talk to you about the moral majority thing, which fascinates me? When you, the clothes that you got up in initially caused more shock here, perhaps, than they did in Europe. In Europe, they were considered to be attractive.
And well, that's because everybody has a different sensibility in Europe than they do in America.
Right. I think a lot of people were surprised at the overreaction in the States. Mm-hmm. Were you?
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, the way I dressed was the way all my girlfriends dressed in New York. I mean, but that's not the way everybody in the rest of the United States dresses.
Right.
So I was shocked, but, you know, I've always dressed with a sort of tongue-in-cheek kind of sense of humor about it at all, and everybody took it so seriously, you know.
But I mean, you were held up at one point almost as being the Scarlet Woman, the thing for all females to be aware of, you know.
Yeah, or males to be aware of.
Or males, wary of. Was that a good thing or a bad thing, do you think?
To what? What? Well, it ended up getting lots of attention, so I suppose it's not a bad thing. No, nothing that happened to me was a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I've had moments of frustration and stuff, or felt that I was being misjudged, or felt that, you know, I'd painted myself into a corner, but in the end, everything that happened to me is good.
But you said you're a romantic, and that would indicate to me that underneath, however tough superficially you may be, you're a bit sensitive.
Definitely.
Yeah. Do you read your own the criticisms of you?
Yeah, sometimes.
And the record company out there presumably has a press department which gets all the clips together. And there's been some... I was talking to Bob Geldof about this, and he was very uptight about press that was anti him and that was particularly about him personally as opposed to him as a musician.
Well, they always go for your throat. When they want to say bad things about you, they rarely criticize your work.
That's criticize
you personally.
Does that hurt you?
Depends on what kind of a mood I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I can sit here rationally and, you know, analyze and say, no, it doesn't hurt me, and no, I don't let it get to me. But sometimes if I'm in a certain state of mind or I'm feeling vulnerable about something else, it will bother me. But I have an oversight to it all.
What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I know ultimately that it doesn't mean anything, that I have to be happy with my work, and that I know that for every person that says something nasty about me, there's 100 people who say something nice about me. And I know that there will always be people that appreciate what I do, so... Mm. I mean, you can't sit around worrying about people disliking you, because they're always going to be there. It can't stop you.
So you're not a person who gets depressed?
Yes, I'm a person that gets depressed, but not about the press. I'd have to be an android to not get depressed. Yeah.
But day-to-day things bother you rather than the larger things, the superficial things, the press things, the odd person that makes an anti-Madonna remark.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, actually...
It doesn't bother me so much that they're making me an anti-Madonna remark. It bothers me that people spend so much time dwelling on the negative and have so much negative energy when they could be doing something positive with their lives. I would think it would be a terrible life to be, you know, to work for those tabloids, you know, and or the Sun or whatever, you know, making up lies about people and just dwelling on the negative, because ultimately, you know, they can't be happy people. And that bothers me more than anything, that people are so obsessed with, you know, the failures of others when they should be more, you know, celebrating life.
You did Live Aid, of course, didn't you?
What?
You did Live Aid.
Yeah.
We weren't at Philadelphia, we were at the London end. What you wouldn't have seen was the enormous screen at Wembley, and when you came on, it was as though a small 10-megaton atomic bomb had gone off, and the whole place erupted. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it was the same in Philadelphia, because there was so much noise going on in Wembley, we couldn't judge it. Was it a good day for you?
It was great. I had a great day. I was really glad to do it.
Is that the sort of thing you'd do again?
Yeah.
Which now brings me around to live gigs, because you've gone very quiet on live concerts.
Because they take a lot of time to put together, and they take a lot out of you. And I just released my third album, and I wanted my album to be out for a while before I went on tour again.
Uh-huh.
And I have lots of specifics, like I don't want to tour in the winter time, and I don't want to, you know, and I want to tour after my album's been out for a while, and I wanted to tour after I did Slammer, and, you know, so it just so happens that it looks like the spring is going to be when I'm going to go on tour in May.
In May where? The States or Europe as well?
Both. Well, if everything goes well, I plan on going to Australia and Japan, then coming back to the United States, and then going to England and Germany and France.
It sounds awful. It sounds like you're going to be on the road for a year.
I'm not. I'm going to be on the road for 10 weeks or I'm not going to do it.
I don't know what to call you. Do I call you Madonna, or do I call you Mrs. Penn, or do I call you Miss...
You call me my name, which is Madonna.
Yeah.
I don't like being called Mrs. It makes me feel like I'm 60 years old.
Madonna's your real name?
Yeah.
It's a nice name, too.
Thank you.
I mean, it's also inevitably connected immediately in your mind with religion and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Are you still religious?
I'm spiritual.
Yeah.
Yes.
But does the name, which you've grown up with, mean anything to you?
It means a great deal to
me.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a link there, is what I mean?
Yes, it's my mother's name, and I love my mother, so there's a link.
And she died, of course.
Yeah.
You lost her very early in life.
Yeah.
Do you remember her?
Yeah.
What do you remember about her?
That she was beautiful. And sweet. And a hard worker.
Mm.
Yeah.
I wonder how much of her is in you.
Yeah, well, I'll never know.
I bet you can recognize it, though.
Yeah. I don't know, sometimes if I think that way and I think, oh, I'm just being too romantic, you know, or it's a fantasy that I have. But I do kind of feel like, you know, it's very rare that a woman names a daughter after her. It's very rare, and it's a rare name, and it's extremely rare in a Catholic Italian family that that should happen. So I think in a way that maybe it was meant to happen, you know, that I should be named after her because she wasn't going to live very long, and then somehow her spirit is inside of me, you know?
Most people, when they do things and they're relaxing, they can catch themselves out and say, ah, that's my past, that's my mother, my father in me. What is do you have moments like that?
Not with my mother. With my father, I suppose sometimes if I'm really being stubborn, because my father's very stubborn, and my father can be a real killjoy. You know, like, when I go out, I'm always the first one that wants to go home from a party. It's like, I look at my watch, well, it's midnight, I have to go now. And everyone says, oh, no, you have to stay. And my father used to do that when we were younger. We would go to relatives, and everybody would be spending the night, and we'd always have to go back, you know. My father was very practical, so that's my father and me.
Can I talk about Shanghai Surprise? And I don't know whether you've seen the British reviews, but the British reviews haven't actually been as bad
as
the American ones. They've reacted the other way.
Mm.
You've obviously seen the film.
Yeah.
Are you disappointed with it?
Extremely.
What went wrong, do you think?
The man who directed it really didn't have an eye for the film, for the big screen. He's a, you know, television director.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he just was in over his head. He didn't know what he was getting himself into. And MGM really wanted to make an action film like Raiders of the Lost Ark, but the script was actually a very personal love story between two people. And while we were shooting it, they kept sending in pages and pages of new pages, scripts of more action. And Sean and I didn't agree to do a movie like that. We wanted to do a movie that was about a love story, not about an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it was edited as if it were an adventure, and it's not. And they left out all the important stuff about a relationship, which was really the saving grace of the film. I mean, we really wanted it to be like African Queen, you know, or like one of those old romantic movies. And that's what we envisioned when we read the script, because we thought it was very well written, but the execution of it just wasn't up to par.
It obviously upsets you.
Yeah, because it was very, very hard work doing that movie.
Was it?
Extremely.
How so?
Because I was in a foreign country. I mean, and China, being in China is about as foreign as you can get. And we were working with Chinese crews, and the weather was very, very bad, and I was very cold walking around in, you know, these little thin cotton blouses.
Mm-hmm.
And there was always communication problems, and I was always getting sick from the food, and it was very long hours, and where we were shooting, where we were living, was hours and hours away. It was just such hard work, you can't believe it. It was really grueling, and there was a lot of tension on the set, you know, between the director and all the actors, and it was just endless tension, you know? And I just kept thinking, you know, well, maybe that this means it's going to be good, you know, because I've worked so hard, you know. I worked my butt off.
Mm.
And felt that I'd grown a lot as an actress in it, but I also feel that you can't really see that the way it's edited. They edited all of my major scenes down to nothing, where I explain my character, why I'm there. The way that the movie's cutting out just seems like I'm this airhead girl who didn't really have a reason and just decided to go on a whim to China. I also really wanted to do a movie that was the complete opposite of Desperately Seeking Susan, because that character was very close to my personality, and so many people said, oh, well, she was great, but can she act? I mean, she was just playing herself. So I really wanted to challenge myself and play something that was very different from me, which is a missionary and really uptight girl who can't express herself, you know. So, and I'm disappointed, yes, because I worked very hard, but once again, I learned a lot from it, so.
I guess you also learned a lot about the press from it, too.
I was even talking about addressing that issue. Yeah, when we got to England, it was like the Third World War, you know.
Why, do you think?
Because Sean and I make good press. I don't know. Because Sean's reputation of getting in fights with photographers and stuff, and he's easily provoked, and he has a bad temper, and they knew that. And
did they provoke you and him?
Oh, yes. You know that. You live in England.
I have lived in England long enough to accept it, and also accept that since I live in England, people will give me the benefit of the doubt. What worried me on your behalf was that you had to leave England at a time when they were giving you a very tough time, and so you didn't have a chance to say, hang on, just calm down. Because the circus...
Well, I tried to do that when I did the press conference with George Harrison, but I really felt that George Harrison didn't give me the chance to speak. I felt that he kept putting his foot in his mouth, and my mouth.
Yes.
I felt like he was very provocative in his statements. I feel like he was saying all the wrong things to calm people down, but I really couldn't say that much, you know. I mean, I tried to, and in the end, I think, you know, it was more beneficial than if I hadn't done it. But it still didn't accomplish what I wanted to accomplish.
In fairness, I think George was trying, but I just think he's a little out of touch now with that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you just can't be your regular self with those people. You can't, if you've got a peculiar sense of humor, they're not going to get your jokes. You know what I mean? Mm. You really have to have your armor on to do it. You know, you have to know what you're getting. You have to really plan and think about every word that comes out of your mouth with them.
Is it worse in England, do you think, than it is here?
Yeah, definitely. Well, because it's so much smaller country, and that's, you know, I mean, everybody reads those papers here. You really only read that stuff if you're in New York or L.A., you know.
Is that going to stop you working again in the British film industry?
No. No, not at all.
You're still in love?
Yes.
What does it feel like?
Oh, my God. It feels like everything. And sometimes it feels like... it feels like a big, huge hand comes around your whole body, and sometimes it's all furry and warm, and it feels good, and sometimes it's scratchy and it hurts you.
But it's also a problem.
But it's always there.
But it is a problem because it's not one person anymore. Up to now, you've lived a life when you've worked very, very hard, and you've achieved your own life.
Yes.
And so has your husband. Now there's two of you to consider. Each of you has to consider the other.
Yeah.
And that must be very difficult. He's got a career, you've got a career.
Yes, it is very difficult.
When how do you actually forget any personal rows you have about who squeezes the toothpaste from the middle of the tube, but how do you actually run your lives so that they don't conflict too much?
Very carefully.
What do you do? Sit down and talk about it?
Yeah, that's the main thing, is communication, you know. Always. I have to say the main thing is trust, not communication, because that happens if you have trust. And the main thing, and to never feel threatened by the other person, and never think that whatever happened in the other person's career, it has nothing to do with your love for that person. And that's the important thing to always keep in mind in the front of you.
Your husband's a very fine actor.
Yes.
Falkland's known out, all that.
Yeah.
You are an actress as well as a singer.
Mm-hmm.
Shanghai Surprise, you had to go to the other end of the earth. Presumably now you're a producer, you're going to be rushing around. He's got his own jobs. What's he doing at the moment?
He's getting ready to do a movie called Tapping the Source.
Will that be done in this country?
Yes, in California.
So that'll be at home. At least you can see each other then.
Yeah.
Because I would have thought the actual pressure's on you. I mean, you hardly ever see each other.
No, we see each other plenty, believe it or not.
I just had this idea of notes being left in the kitchen.
Yeah, we do that too. Lots of letters going back and forth, but mostly big phone bills. Yeah.
All right, final question.
Okay.
You've been very, very patient. And I was surprised because you're quite different to what I imagined you to be. I think, in fairness, we were all expecting you to be very difficult, very awkward, very standoffish.
Oh.
And you've been very charming.
Oh, thank you.
Are you always like this?
Charming? Hell no. No one can be charming all the time. But most of the time, I think I am.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think I end up surprising most people. That's good, too. I like to surprise people. So.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.